Gara observed the Earth as the cycle reset. After a long hunger, a new era had begun. A time of prosperity and progress. She watched her children with pride as they invented many beautiful things. They used their heads and their hands, and they made a spark, a bulb, a horse made of metal, and boxes that filled rooms with stories. But this beautiful world was off balance, and Gara could sense a great danger was coming. Gara set out to the world below to find out what the danger was. First, she searched the mountains and the dirt deep below, but there she found nothing. Then she dove into the caves and the hollows and the lakes and the rivers, but again she could find no danger. Finally, she flew across the vast oceans, and this is where she found it, a molecule of which there were too many hovering above the sea. Gara closed her eyes and became one of them to feel what they were feeling, to understand why they were causing an imbalance in the world. As she transformed herself, she felt a great heat inside and an indescribable urge to dive into the ocean to cool herself. But there were too many of them, and no matter how hard she tried, she could not meet with the water's surface. She felt as if the horrible heat would consume her, and so she gave up and returned to her perch in the sky. Gara tried to find somewhere to put the molecule of which there were too many, but no such place existed. She could not fix this. She could not protect her children. All she could do was to send them warning signs so they could save themselves. Once the warnings had been sent, it would be her turn to pray to them.
This has been your early morning gospel of Gara, Alethra's One, The Years of Imbalance. May we tread lightly upon the earth today and every day henceforth.
Today is the day. After the morning gospel, I roll onto my stomach and let my arm dangle off the side of the bed. Tired from the early hour and turning my LEC box, which powers my wave box radio, I rest a moment. Then I rise. Today is the day. The letter is on my nightstand. I intend to take it with me in case anyone questions me on my journey. I get up quickly and pull on my pants and shirt that are draped across the stool in the corner from the day before. Then I spread the gray paste across my arms and ankles, cold and thick, and it blends into my olive skin, and the only way you can tell it's there is that slight smell of sulfur, which isn't pleasant, but neither is bug fever. I wrap the paste and its tin in a cloth and add the few things I will need for my journey. My LEC box, my bulb, my identification card that matches the inked number on my wrist, my fishing rod, which I plan to strap to Moon's saddle, my second set of clothes, my holster, my knife, and briefly I consider bringing the bug net, but my destination is New York City. I'm assuming they'll have nets at the hotel. The door creaks as I shut it behind me and make my way through the wet field that spreads out from behind my small hut. Tall trees ring the clearing that leads to the back where the horses live. As I cross, the wet grass slides along the soles of my boots, leaving a trail behind me. Halfway across, a deer appears from behind a large oak and slowly makes its way over to me. I stop, and it bends to smell my knees, inhales deeply, then turns and bounds back into the forest. The stable is a rickety affair. Half the beams are bent or close to breaking. But neither Prudence nor I have taken the initiative to fix it up, and we both seem to be waiting for the other to take the lead. It will likely stay as it is now, with its splintered walls and drooping roof to the west, the green moss that clings to the door frames, until the pasture, and eventually the forest, lays its claim to it completely. I swing the front gate open and say a little prayer to Gara so that it may stay on its hinges. Moon whinnies quietly in greeting. Her nuzzle is warm as I let her smell the sulfur on my palms and I stroke her neck and her shoulder. She is dark, dark brown, except for the white star on her forehead, which was more rounded than spiked, and the reason I named her Moon. Prudence's filly eyes me with skittish glances and moves to the back of the pen beside Moon's. I can hear Prudence as she makes her way to the stable, sound traveling effortlessly through the cracked walls of the barn. She's come to say goodbye. I let Moon out of her stall and stroke her back gently before lifting the saddle onto her and leading her outside.
You're off early,
Prudence says, looking at my packed bag.
It's only a 4-hour ride.
I just wanted to get the lay of the land. I dig my booted toe into the mud.
You nervous?
Prudence tries to get me to look up at her, but I keep digging with my toes, letting water seep into the tiny holes I've made in the muck before me.
Yes.
Prudence can smell my lies over the sulfur, so I don't, and add,
not sure it should be me that's going. You know it is.
Reproach in her voice, almost cold. I step into the holes, letting the muck suck around my boot.
I suppose. Wilson's will was ironclad, and it was his choice, indisputably.
She's about to make a stand, I can tell. But all I add is, not if you listen to anything the younger Wilson would have to say.
At this, Prudence just laughs. They're mad they'll have to answer to you when you get back.
The air is still cold, the sun barely up, and I inhale deeply. They think he went crazy before he died, and that he was crazy when he wrote me in as the new sheriff.
Old Wilson was a lot of things, but he wasn't crazy.
The older woman steps closer to me, the blanket around her shoulders like a cape.
Besides, those two sons of his, they're not exactly bright. I've met bricks smarter than both.
She wants to cheer me. It's how she deals with my moods. But I'm too nervous to laugh. 2 years as deputy, and now I'm supposed to be sheriff of the entire outpost? The words come out louder than I intend, rising among the tall trees enclosing the pasture, and I look away from Prudence, as if ashamed by the sound of my own voice.
Wilson knew what he was doing. I'm sure it will be fine.
Finally, I look into her eyes that are such a light blue, they look almost white, and are set very deeply in her wrinkled face.
I hope so, I say. I just wish I hadn't been assigned to Sheriff Kane for my exam.
Decorate it. Famous. Infamous among the law. It has crossed my mind the Wilson brothers hired him to scare me off.
I'm sure he's just like every other sheriff out there.
I snort at her, sounding more like my horse than a future sheriff. He served at the Constitute before he became the sheriff of New York. My voice sounds like I'm trying to sell her something. But Prudence just keeps looking at me with her tired, washed-out eyes, unimpressed as ever. And so I don't tell her of the time Ronan Kane took down the Boston Embowler, the New Haven Hangman, the New York City Lady Killer, how he's called in to help any time the local law senses something fishy, something strange about a case, how he is the master of figuring out the hardest cases, and how he always, always gets the bad guy. Because Prudence doesn't care about Ronan Kane. She's already thinking of the day I come back home to her and the horses.
Well, it's only 2 weeks, which he should be grateful to spend with you. And then you'll be back here, protecting us. And don't let Wilson's kids get to you when you're in charge.
I'll be back only if Kane sees me fit. Prudence says nothing for a moment. Then, quietly,
I will never trust you near my kitchen, nor near my garden. But my life, I trust you with that. And that is why Wilson chose you and not those two idiot sons of his. Now get out of here and become a sheriff before you change your mind.
I can tell she's about to cry. It's always been like this. She's always made me leave right before the flood. She also knows I'll turn around at the last moment and catch her anyway. It's always been like that, too. Ever since my mother disappeared and dumped me at her door and made Prudence my Prudence.
Oh, before I forget.
She digs through her back pocket, eyes already watering, and hands me a small black square and I look at her in puzzlement. "What's this for?" I ask, but all she says is, "The city," and takes a step back, inviting me to leave quickly now. I strap my fishing rod to Moon's saddle and walk her across the muddy yard out past my hut and past Prudence's hut. Then I get on and start off down the road, turning around at the edge of the yard to see Prudence with her face buried in her hands.
Hi, this is Elle. For full episodes of Harper Rose and the Women on the Wall, just search for Harper Rose, or for me, Elle Elsie, in whatever app you are using to listen to podcasts, and it should pop right up. I would like to take a moment to ask you to rate and review the show, since indie pods don't have the email server or the money to get people to do so, especially when a story is just starting out. I know you've heard this 1,000 times before, but it really does help. I hope you enjoy Harper's journey, and may we tread lightly, today and every day henceforth.